You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Alexandra Demiziani.
People are more familiar with brand platforms than they are with political party platforms. And therefore, I really do feel that brands need to take a disproportionate responsibility in playing a role that typically traditional infrastructure and institutions played.
Alexandra is co-founder and global managing partner of marketing and branding consultancy 21st Century Brand. Her experience runs a gamut from developing advertising campaigns for iconic brands like Ralph Lauren, National Geographic, and The Economist out of New York, to leading nonprofit organizations in Rwanda committed to improving the health of the most vulnerable populations. In 2006, Alex joined the Coca-Cola Company as Global Creative Director on the health and wellness portfolio and corporate social responsibility efforts. 8 years later, she joined the Airbnb team, eventually taking the role of Global Marketing Director. Alex and the team thrust the brand onto the world stage, winning innumerable effectiveness and creative accolades along the way, including Lions, Webbies, and Effies. Alexandra was named a Brand Innovator Woman to Watch in 2017 and was one of 25 EMEA innovators in 2016. Alexandra, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you for having me, Nick.
But I'm thrilled to talk with someone that has worked with so many interesting brands that we talk about a lot, Coca-Cola, Airbnb. But I'm intrigued in the ways in which you've been engaged with these brands, because it does seem like there's a great undercurrent of the social responsibility side of all of that as well. How did you end up on that side? I don't know if that side of marketing is the way to say it, but with that particular approach.
Well, Nick, honestly, and I think that my CV really demonstrates this, I have spent a lifetime struggling between doing business and doing good. I like doing both. And for so many years, it was really presented to it was really presented as a zero-sum game. You could have one or the other, but both didn't work. And so I was almost on a quest to find this place that where I could both do business and do good. And so, you know, I started mainly in luxury brand advertising in New York City. Actually, at the age of 24, 5 years into my career, I opened up my closet and saw pantsuits from left to right and thought this is not the life I had intended on living. And I resigned from a very good job that day in advertising and went backpacking around the world by myself, much to my father's chagrin, I have to say. And went backpacking around the world by myself for a year. I went to Ecuador and East Africa, India and Southeast Asia. And it was really the first time in my life, despite the fact that I was a well-traveled youth, that was mainly in the developed world. And so on this trip, it really was the first time in my life that I had been exposed to such abject poverty. And I made a commitment in that moment to try to marry the marketing communications expertise that I had been building with doing something meaningful and good in the world and for the world. That was really the beginning of my quest. And I have to say that quest persisted for many, many years. One of the reasons I initially joined Coca-Cola actually was because I was global creative director on the corporate social responsibility work stream and the health and wellness beverage portfolio. But if I'm honest with you, it really wasn't until Airbnb that my gut instinct that not only were these things not a zero-sum game, but could actually be complementary and mutually beneficial, that was really proved out. And so in the course of that time, I realized really what a mission-driven brand could look like, brand and business could look like. I realized what transformative value a purpose-driven, values-led brand and organization could drive for stakeholders. And was really determined to take those lessons and apply them more broadly across more organizations who will benefit and who will benefit society in finding that sweet spot between doing good and doing business.
I love that story because I think sometimes when I'm working on a nonprofit or with a social services group just in my own life. With my background, I do sometimes, for those fans of the Lego movie out there, I sometimes feel like I'm a little bit like Lord Business. And and a lot of times, I like that you right off the bat said that it's a struggle of doing business and doing good. And I don't think it is that zero-sum game. So that's fascinating. You talk about Coca-Cola, and I was, just reminded of, Coke's vision of making sure that there's a Coke within reach of everyone in the world, that's one of their big reach goals. And for a company of that scope, it could seem people could might miss the fact on why social good is so important for a brand of that size and scope. But why is that?
A couple of reasons. I mean, one, I'm a real believer in enlightened self-interest, rather. And there is an enlightened self-interest. I mean, you need your communities to be healthy, to have consumers. I mean, at the most basic level, if you want to have community members and consumers, they need to be healthy, alive, engaged. So, I mean, that is the very, very basic. But beyond that, I actually think that brands have an increasing, not just right, but a responsibility. It's a bit of the Spidey thing, right? It's with great power comes great responsibility, because for better or for worse, and to be honest with you, as an individual, this makes me quite sad. People are more familiar with brand platforms than they are with party platforms, political party platforms. And therefore, I really do feel that brands need to take a disproportionate responsibility vis-a-vis history in playing a role that typically traditional infrastructure and institutions played that have since been eroded or perhaps no longer reflect really modern society. So again, I think it's around the enlightened self-interest. You want your communities to be healthy. You want to give back to your communities. If your communities aren't thriving, then how on earth can they continue to engage in the brand and actually be consumers of it? But also just, I believe there is increasingly a societal responsibility for brands to really step into that role. And frankly, you see consumers asking for it as well, and even investors. I mean, if you look at the Edelman Trust Barometer of the past couple of years, you'll see that everyone is looking increasingly to brands and corporations to play a more active social role.
And that's a big shift. I was just going to bring up the Trust Barometer data, because I think a lot of times people write it off as, oh, that's how Alex approaches things. That's not what's needed today. And increasingly, it's very much the case. And it's worth pointing out and pointing to that data, because this is probably one of the bigger dynamic shifts, because it used to be that some of this this involvement, even social responsibility, social involvement was viewed as a third rail in business, that you can't mix those two. It's not it's not our job to have an opinion. And really, as both the data and people around us are pointing to, it is the Spidey great responsibility that brands have today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so 64% of consumers want CEOs to take the lead on policy change instead of waiting for government to impose it. This is from the Edelman Trust Barometer just of last year, of 2018. I mean, that's massive. And again, even investors are holding companies accountable to these higher societal standards. So where, you know, where the investment criteria used to be really focused around the growth strategy and the profitability story and the cash flow outlook, I mean, now they're looking at, you know, corporations that have equal focus on environment, society, and governance issues, corporate culture and conduct, role in addressing societal issues. This is a major shift, as you said, Nick.
So with a major shift like that, what do you do? And I think that that's why your example at you know, a brand like Coke, which is so very big, how do you make change in an organization that big?
you hit on something very interesting, Nick. I mean, I think it is really, really difficult. I mean, it is, you know, it's funny, as I spoke a lot, as you can imagine, when I was at Airbnb, because people were so keen to understand almost like the secret of its success, you know, the secret ingredients. Everyone just wants the powder sachet so they can add water, stir, and boom, have a success. And obviously, it doesn't work that way. And it was interesting, though, because people would often say at the end of the talk, they would say, well, you know, aren't you lucky you're at Airbnb? It's a brand new brand. And so you get to do this from the ground up. And that is true. I mean, there is absolutely a truth to that. It is easier to grow these things from inception than it is to change the course of what can feel like a Titanic, you know?
Right.
But it also comes with its downsides. So, you know, you don't have the scale, you don't have the credibility when you're an early upstart like Airbnb was at the time, whereas Coca-Cola does. So, you know, they both come with their pros and cons. They both take a lot of work, even if you're able to do it from inception, as is the case at Airbnb. It's like tending a garden, you know? I mean, you have to be looking for weeds every single day and yanking them out when you see them. So even if you're able to sort of be born with purpose at the core, it is a persistent and ongoing job. Now, when you're talking about a behemoth, you know, almost a machine like Coca-Cola, I think the most critical thing to appreciate is that it's a team sport. It just can't be one person. This has to be something that multiple disciplines are signing up. And frankly, this goes back to the very tenet that, you know, a brand is not about marketing communications. And I know you know this, Nick, but you know, that a brand is really kind of the interface with the world that expresses this living, breathing business idea. And as such, the purpose must be embedded and then bred in really every facet of the organization to succeed. Really every facet and every discipline. So I think, you know, at a place like Coke, I think the single most important thing to remember and adhere to is that it is a team sport, and to succeed, you need champions, ambassadors, and stakeholders across geos, across disciplines, across lines of business, for it to truly land.
I think that is fascinating, looking at size and scope. And we've talked a lot on the show about digital transformation. And I feel like those same issues come up of, oh, aren't you lucky at a great big organization, when in actuality, what it takes to sometimes get this this behemoth to take a corner is a little tricky. And a lot of times someone small and scrappy can negotiate that even easier. Do you struggle to keep up with everything that's new with marketing today? Don't get frustrated. Get scrappy. I'd love to bring my Get Scrappy keynote to your next conference or corporate event. With a foot in the classroom and a foot in the field working with clients, I know what works and why, and I can't wait to share it with you during a talk that mixes strategic insights with tactical, practical tips. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics, at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard with two A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So one thing I want to talk about with, you mentioned Airbnb, with being a part of a brand that is really defining a new market where we're seeing this more and more today, something, you know, the ride sharing was not a thing a decade ago. I think that is probably fair to say. I'm trying to think about time. So what do you do when you're both defining your brand, being that interface that you were just talking about, and really almost defining not only your brand, but the overall space as well?
Interesting. I think that there is, so I think that the traditional perspective on that would be, well, you know, you're creating a new category, and therefore what you really need to do is hammer on the, you know, functional value or the functional role that it plays or the way it works. And of course there had to be a little bit of that alongside some of the other communication at Airbnb. It was important for people to understand that, you know, it was an app or it was online and, you know, this is how you could use it in the early days. But I actually think that it's when you are creating a new space, when you're defining a new category, that purpose is at its most important, is its most critical, because you have to explain to people why. Why should they be interested in this new category? And why should they be interested in this new product? And that should be a higher order why. And so I think really at Airbnb, things shifted tremendously once we really understood this concept of belonging. And I say understood this concept because that really was that was born of a truism. I mean, we went around the world and spoke to community members, and actually what kept bubbling up was that it created a sense of belonging that they could not find in other accommodation possibilities. And so I actually think it is when you're defining a new category that you need to identify these really big, important whys, why it exists and why people should care. And that's one of the things I think Airbnb did so successfully.
I love that, because we talk about the why a lot, but I think that that's a wonderful answer of the outsized importance. The why is always important for any business, for any brand, but when you are creating the category, when this is not the way that you'd normally take care of your lodging needs, then all of a sudden there is an even bigger why that has to be defined. So we've walked through your career through our conversation. We've talked about making that choice to backpack and learn about the world. You brought that experience back to Coca-Cola. Were you able to infuse some of that social responsibility into this iconic brand? Developing the why for both the Airbnb brand and the space, the category as a whole. As founder and global managing partner of a company called 21st Century Brand, and me hosting a podcast called On Brand, I feel like I have to ask, what makes up a 21st Century Brand? What should that be, look like?
Well, we have a very, very specific view.
I thought you might.
I think you have to if you call yourself 21st Century Brand, don't you? We have a very specific view. I mean, we really believe that influential 21st century brands are comprised of four main things. One is that they are purpose-led, right? They are ensuring that their scale, that their business model indeed, is ultimately to the benefit of the communities they serve. We believe also that they are community driven, and they align incentives across customers, investors, and employees. And this is a really interesting discussion to be having, particularly with a lot of the sort of marketplace tech companies today, because often they view them not as communities. They view them as sides of a marketplace or supply and demand. And so that's a very, very different lens through which to view your stakeholders and various community members. They're tech enabled. So they're enabled by a world-class data-driven product that scales globally, but also connects emotionally, has a meaningful, important role in people's lives that incites an emotional connection beyond just a transactional action. And they're narrative based. They are able to unify all stakeholders, whether that's multiple sides of the marketplace, their internal employees, their investors, their shareholders, policymakers, really with one shared story that is told coherently across all touch points.
I want to focus on that narrative-based aspect of the 21st century brand as we talk about helping our listeners here tell their story. When your organization is narrative-based, what form does that one core story that you were talking about take? Or is there one story to rule them all?
I think that there is one narrative to rule them all, but that doesn't necessarily, that is not executed in one story. So, you know, I think a founding story is a wonderful story, or a turnaround story is a wonderful story, but that's not the only story. I feel that there is more of a, I'm trying to think of a good analogy, and it's just not coming to me right now, Nick, but I think of almost, it's like DNA. You can have multiple babies though, and they all come out looking a little bit differently, but they share this DNA. So that's kind of the way I think about it. I do think that there is a core brand narrative, but it can be told in various stories. It can be executed or expressed through various stories. The important thing is that those stories are coherent over touch points and, frankly, over time. I don't say consistent because I'm not into matching luggage, but right. certainly coherent. So all of those stories should add up to one core narrative. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And when you this could sound very tactical, but I think one of the most important things when you have a story is making sure that you're sharing it with those internally. Is that a story document? We've talked with some brands on the show, like Coldwell Banker, that had a brand story book that they produce. What's the best, or what are some of the different tactics for sharing that story internally, right, so that everyone is on the same page? And delivering it coherently, I like what you said, so that it might not be, okay, I'm reciting something like the Pledge of Allegiance, but I'm able to tell what the key points in our brand story are.
That's right. Yep. So, I mean, so the first thing I would say is, again, this is it's a team sport. So you've got to get everyone telling their part of the story. That adds up to this cohesive narrative. So again, you need lots of players involved. And the other thing is they need to be shared really ad nauseum. It is never too much. So shared by many, shared consistently. And then in terms of the actual, you know, media or touch points, I mean, it's what feels more organic to the organization. Now, I'm a big believer that you cater to different people's styles of learning and information ingestion. I don't think it can just be a brand book that sort of, you know, whether that sits online or sits to the side. I think that that's one great, you know, that's a great resource to be able to point people to in onboarding employees, or, you know, people don't remember in the course of their day. Wonderful resource to point to, but it can feel quite passive otherwise. I mean, for me, this is like, do you have all hands? Tell a story in every single all hands. Tell one story in every single all hands, whether that's from your consumer or other community members or your employee base. That, your narrative needs to be expressed consistently and through as many touch points as possible. So, you know, I'm a big believer in make those stories live, keep those stories fresh, find new ones that are just more articulations and expressions of that core narrative. You know, tell it often, tell it across the many, not the few, and have it in as many forums as possible, so that it is at people's fingertips when they need to refer to it and enact it themselves. Make it a part of performance management. You know, I mean, the narrative itself, the brand narrative itself should determine what kind of values, what kind of behaviors your employees act with. So even that becomes a story or a source of stories.
I think that's so important. And I think the other reason that merits a big reminder for folks listening out there is we also find ourselves in this kind of dashboard culture. with all of the analytics, which are great and important. But I love your point, and I think it's a great challenge for folks listening. Tell one story in your all hands, along with all of the great dashboards, all the great reporting that you're looking at. What's one story that you've gleaned from customers, from partners, from others that you're working with, and making that a part of your bigger story as well?
Yeah.
So as we talk about storytelling, we have come to that point in the podcast where I get to ask you, Alex, for a story about a brand that has made you smile recently.
Okay, so I feel like this is a bit of a cop-out because in some ways, who doesn't love this brand? But the thing that actually is making me smile is that it's still making me smile, and that's Nike. I think that they have just done a tremendous job of breathing new life with a slightly new angle into Just Do It. Through, for example, you know, all the call cap work, obviously, last year, you know, believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. And dream crazier as well. You know, it's that it's only crazy until you do it. And I just, for me, it is what's so impressive is the fact that they managed to keep this, you know, relatively not old idea. You know, it's been with Nike for ages. So it has this incredible history, but then they're able to breathe new life into it and make it culturally relevant again. You know, now it's not just about kind of materially achieving or even athletically achieving. And now it's about, you know, it's about being true to who you are, no matter how crazy, no matter how much you're defying expectations, which is, you know, absolutely on point culturally today. Continues to reinvigorate Nike and keep it at the forefront of culture and earning it a disproportionate share of voice. I think it's spectacular when a brand with that kind of history can continue to reinvigorate its cultural relevance and really stand for something.
I thought it was funny that you acknowledged it as a cop-out, because it is. Name a brand. What's a brand that you can give us? I think if you went out and asked anybody on the street, Nike's probably going to be there. It's one of the big ones that we think about. But what I think you touched upon that's important is how hard that is. They have this role as kind of a cultural challenger. And, you know, giving us these messages, you know, reminding us that if you have a body, you're an athlete, and, you know, doing this, even if it's hard, the mind space that they've occupied and do so well is not an easy plot of real estate to be standing in, because it is about continuing to do that hard work and making that relevant as we change as well.
That's right.
So, Alex, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Well, certainly you can come to our site, 21st Century Brand. That will tell you more about us, why we exist, what we feel we can do for our clients, how we operate, which for us is as important as what we do. So please do come to 21stcenturybrand.com. Otherwise, I'm sort of in all the normal places. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter. You don't get lost in the weird and twisted journey of my resume. I mean, we didn't even talk about when I was marketing condoms in Rwanda for a couple of years, but there are some very strange twists and turns. But I do believe it's all kind of culminated in who I am today and what I do, and indeed what we do at 21st Century Brand.
Well, that is great. And with not even getting to that, then we've left the audience wanting more is what we've done. I'm led to believe that's an important part of the show. Well, right. Alex, thank you for joining us this week on Brand.
Thank you so much, Nick. I've really enjoyed it.
And a reminder that if you enjoyed the show, be sure to head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Subscribe to the show, and please do consider leaving a rating and review. It helps others find the program as well. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.